Welcome back into another edition of College Golf Talk. Burko and Brentley with you. Laying this one down Thursday just after lunchtime. We're not scrambling to and from an airport. A lot to recap. Also a special guest coming your way in just a matter of moments as you were able to catch up with someone who's been part of a team that you can argue is the best in the country so far this fall.
Yeah, I was very pleased, Burko, to spend 20-25 minutes with Andrew Goodman, the senior from Oklahoma. I think he's a friend of the pod, longtime listener, and kudos to him because he was so kind that he paused the Kansas City Royals game last night. He's a big Royals fan, big KC sports fan. He paused the game to jump on and talk a little golf. So, little gestures like that go a long way.
Yeah, good karma. Royals taking down the Orioles there, back-to-back games at Camden Yards. They move on. We will hear from Drew Goodman in just a bit. A week ago, we were talking about Hurricane Helene, the potential here in Florida. Obviously, so much devastation through the panhandle in Georgia and up into the Carolinas. And I know you've got an update for the folks in Asheville because we have seen the images, and it's heartbreaking, and we certainly send everyone impacted our very best.
Yeah, there's a few universities kind of in that area, and as a longtime Floridian, I was amazed and surprised just how much devastation you could truly get 3,000 some miles inland, like just the flooding, the downed trees, power lines, the loss of life. It's all just been terrible, and so I wanted to check in with a few of the universities, Western Carolina, App State, and of course the UNC Asheville women's team. They do not have a men's team there, but reached out to Ross Cash, their longtime head coach. Everyone is safe. They actually flew in, Burko, last Thursday about 4 p.m. They landed in Knoxville, and of course the storm, the bad stuff started rolling in kind of late Thursday around 8 p.m. Eastern and then on through Friday. And it was an interesting story because it's about a 2-hour drive down I-40. And for those who have followed the news, they know that a large section of that road is no longer there. And they were able to, make the trek, that 2 hours along that interstate, were able to get back to campus safely. Coach Cash was able to make the 45-minute commute back up home to Eastern Tennessee where he lives. They sustained little damage, but he's still – as of yesterday, Burko could not get back into campus. Roads are closed. Roads are destroyed. Their facility with their flight scope, launch monitors, practice screen, pretty much everything he said except for golf balls is probably destroyed by 15 to 20 feet of water. Their facility was fairly brand new right along that French Broad River right there. And just terrible stuff. But the most important thing, obviously, is that all his players safe. They were able to get to Charlotte last weekend. They kind of all scattered. And now the question is, what now? We had Stuart Burke, the head coach at Kansas State, who was at Tulane a few years ago on the pod. If you remember, Burko, they had an entire semester where they were basically satellite. Like they weren't on campus. They had to prepare for tournaments living at a hotel in a different city. And so I think time will tell what's going to happen here. Classes won't start back up again until at least October 28th. So that's more than 3 weeks away. That's almost a month from now. Their first tournament is in about 10 days, 10 or 11 days in Charleston. And there's a good chance that that's the first time that they see each other since everything went down. So definitely hearts are out. I wrote a story, so encourage people to go online, read it. There's also a link to how you can help financially as well. And it's going to be something that isn't going to get fixed overnight. This is going to be something that area is going to have to deal with for the next several months to a year. And definitely thinking about our friends up there in Western North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. Our thoughts again go out to all those impacted, and go back almost 20 years ago, Hurricane Katrina disbanded the programs at Tulane. Yeah. They went away because of that. So it puts a lot of things in perspective. And again, we'll continue to monitor and update as needed. On a positive side of things, La Costa, we saw the NCAA sort of announce all their postseason venues, I think across 240 locations in all their sports. And
That
not a
was a
big
long
surprise.
file. A lot of
Yeah,
word count.
I just Googled, whatever, Command F Golf. In La Costa, no surprise whatsoever. An additional 2 years on the back end of the first go around. So the next four through 2028 going to be out there in California. And it's sort of the mantra, if you will, of this destination for the NCAA championships. We had 3 great years at Greyhawk. We had a nice start at La Costa. And I believe as it continues to grow, mature, fill in, probably going to be a heck of a place. And as I said last year, I believe, maybe on this pod, no, I think it was on the broadcast, the two best teams in the country won the national championships. It identified the best team that happened to be the best team all season long. So I think La Costa will only get better as the greens mature and things start to fill in. And that doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, and it didn't just identify the best champion. If you look through match play, the eight teams that made match play, you can make a case that it was the eight best teams. Now, we did have that at Greyhawk a couple years ago on the men's side, but definitely the pros outweigh the cons. The fact that we could potentially build history and have records and iconic shots. To me, that's probably the most important thing. And I talked about it with Drew a little bit, as we'll hear here, and that was one of the main things for him. Like, he's talking about how, golfers who are little kids now who may grow up one day to play for the Oklahoma Sooners, like, they will be able to chase the same kind of history that he's chasing right now. So to me, that's the big thing. The golf course has gotten overall positive reviews. Talking with John Fields yesterday, the head coach at Texas, who has kind of spearheaded this effort. The main goal for them outside of the golf course, because I think he agrees that the 18th hole probably needs to be tweaked a little bit over the next couple years, put the driver back in the players' hands, make them at least contemplate maybe going for that green and two. But he said the number one goal for next year, hot meals for the media and better food. So that was really the only complaint. And if you get the food right, Burko, people can overlook any other small ancillary things, but I'm very encouraged by this news because we could get that Omaha that some people have been desiring.
And teams looking to get there in April and May, as we take a look at some of the results that just finished up over the past few days, the Blessings Collegiate Invitational, clean sweep for the Arkansas women and the LSU men. Your takeaways from the Razorbacks and this upstart LSU Tiger team on the men's side of things. A new coach, a new vibe, some new players. They are an intriguing watch early in October.
Well, I think Shauna and her team on the women's side there at Arkansas are probably glad that the men forfeited their regional site this year to be able to host this event, because this is going to be a huge rankings boost for them when the rankings come out in 12 days on October 15th. Obviously, we saw what this tournament did for them last year, being able to this year beat up on a big or a really good Mississippi State team. So that's only going to help them kind of moving forward. And then on the men's side, like I know we talked about LSU earlier this year, but I'm really encouraged by the job that Jake Amos has been able to do. Like, they started with a win. He's been able to back that up now. And how about Al Getclean? 63 in the final round. He didn't win. Lost to the freshman there, but eight shots better than anyone else in the field. Beat the scoring average for the day by more than 13 shots. So that's a job well done by LSU, and they're going to be flying back to Baton Rouge pretty ecstatic.
Arizona State getting the job done at the Windy City. The women, a 6-shot win over South Carolina. The Sun Devils really doing it with just five. an impressive five so far. Jasmine Koo, the freshman from USC, wins individually. UCLA, maybe a struggle at eight, but a former Pac-12 flair, if you will, with ASU and Jasmine Koo. But I think all four of those teams, even though UCLA struggled a bit, I'm not overly concerned. It's just one of them.
One of the things that popped out was Kathy Park from USC tied for 59th. I think Justin's got to be probably disappointed in that performance for her, but definitely glad to see the freshman get the win there and the team still be able to finish third with arguably their best player having what I think is probably statistically her worst college golf result. And to touch on Arizona State real quickly, like this was going to be the storyline all year. Margin for error, very, very slim with only five players on the roster. But you have to shout out Patience Rhodes. Had a rocky start to her college career, battled injuries, redshirted, comes off a Curtis Cup now. I think confidence at an all-time high. I believe that's back-to-back top tens for her now. So this is a squad who we may have wondered, do they have a number one? Do they have a horse that they kind of can ride to the promised land? I think Patience Rhodes so far has shown that she could be one of those first team, second team All-American types.
Critical point. I'm always a big believer of what maybe somebody does in the summer, being part of that GB&I Curtis Cup team that was victorious at Sunningdale. I believe firmly that can help somebody get over the hump to the positive side of things. So we'll continue to see if Patience does that. The Molly Intercollegiate, Stanford, their debut this season. They win by 18 over Cal. Paula Martin, San Pedro, her first collegiate win. Three freshmen in the top 10 for Ann Walker's squad. Not a surprise. You've referenced perhaps the greatest recruiting class ever in all of women's college golf. I'm a believer in Paula Martin, San Pedro. I think she's one of the five best players in college golf. To see her breakthrough, get the win. They're going to be there in May, and they're going to, if they're not the team, they're one of the three or four teams, and that's not a slight to anyone else. Ann Walker, that program is on cruise control. She'll never say it. She doesn't need to say it. When you can go out, to me, they're very similar to the Dan Brooks squad of the late 90s through the early 10s, if
Mid-2000s.
you will, that you can throw six offers out and you know three are going to say yes, and recruiting's easy. Again, Ann Walker, I'm diminishing the job she does, but I'm acknowledging she's created something that I believe would make her job very easy. Who wouldn't want to go to Stanford to play college golf if you can meet the academic criteria? I think it's that much on cruise control right now in Palo Alto.
Yeah, they're very much creatures of habit right now, and I think they've earned the, ability to do that. They don't give in to peer pressure. They don't try to go play better fields or bigger tournaments or go play on the other side of the country when they don't have to or when they don't want to. I mean, this is their first event of the season, and the teams have played three, maybe even four times by now. They know what works. They stick to what works, and I agree with you. Paula, I think the thing for her last year was her short game was not very good. And granted, she hit a lot of greens, a lot of fairways. She didn't have to rely on that, but that was the difference. And talking with Coach Walker as well, like that was the difference between a T3, a T5, a T7, and a victory. So clearly, the short game is a lot better this year. You put three freshmen in the top 10 as well. They get it done even without Mega Gane. And you wonder, like, as deep as this team and talented as this team is Mega Gane going to struggle to make the lineup moving forward? I think this team has made a great case to maybe keep her on the bench for the next one. Because you win a tournament, roll right in, keep the momentum going. They have the talent to be able to beat anyone, anywhere.
Talented field in Fort Worth, Texas, the Hogan Collegiate at Colonial. We will have those results on the other side of this interview with Brentley and Drew Goodman.
All right, pleased to be joined by Drew Goodman, senior at Oklahoma, newly minted SEC golfer, no longer a Big 12 golfer. Drew, thanks for coming on. Have you, is the it just means more mantra, is that palpable? Have you felt that already now that you've been in the SEC for a few weeks now?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, everybody on campus, all they want to talk about is, you know, it's a new era. We're doing new things. You hear that a lot, that it just means more. And I think you can feel it on campus with all the different sports teams, whether it's football or softball or us. You know, we go to tournaments and we see all these SEC teams, and there's a lot of really good ones. And, you know, we want to beat them. They want to beat us. It feels like it's another level of competition.
Well, you probably thought on the football field last weekend, what the heck was that with the Auburn Tigers? May have lost their SEC card after that one. But we'll move on to golf. We'll stick to golf. Oklahoma, I mean, this is a team that I think I wasn't alone in billing you guys as one of the teams to beat. Had you guys ranked third preseason coming in. You've gone T3 and now back-to-back wins, coming off a win at Colonial for the Hogan Collegiate. You can't win a title in October, but what was your head coach, Ryan Hibble, what was his message to you guys after another great win?
Just that we've grown a lot, and that if we can continue on this track and keep growing as a team, that honestly, we don't think there's anybody out there that can beat us. We've kind of seen our potential. I think as you looked at our year last year, you could see flashes from some of the younger guys. And even though we didn't come close to fulfilling that potential, there was a lot of growth. And that's what coach told us. He told us he was really proud of what we were doing as a team, and each individual guy, how much they've learned and grown and gotten better. And, you know, as we look forward, like you said, we can't win a championship right now, but I do really believe that that's how you can end up winning the championship. It starts now, and however much you can grow and continue to get better as a team, I think we're on a great track.
What are the challenges to having such a deep squad? I mean, you guys can go 9-10 deep. You've already had, I think, 8 or 9 different guys log some starting action this year. What are the pros and cons of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge is that you have to bring your best every day. That's what we talk about as a team. You look around at some of the other teams that are really good, and they have 7 or 8 guys, and that's great. And, you know, it can be comforting when you know you're going to be on the road every week. But, I mean, even for me as a senior who you might expect to play every tournament, my spot is not ever guaranteed. I have to continue to earn it. And that's true for every one of our guys. And I think if you asked any one of them, they'd tell you that qualifying is more difficult than a tournament. And all of a sudden, when we pull up to a tournament and we're in a spot where maybe something's not going right, or we have pressure coming down the last few holes, we know we're prepared for it because we've done it over and over and over again in qualifying, because we have that many guys that can go do it. And you have trust in the guys around you that they've earned the right to be there, and that they're going to do everything that they can to get the win for the team.
Have you had to sweat it out in qualifying this year yet?
Not this year.
Yeah, thankfully.
You know,
what's your horror story? What's your qualifying horror story?
Well, I can go back to my freshman year. I don't know if I necessarily have any horror stories, but I mean, this'll just kind of show how competitive it was. We were going to Pebble Beach my freshman year, first tournament. We take 6 guys, and I wasn't really super competitive. The top 5 guys, you know, we divide out into multiple qualifiers, a few rounds each, and a couple guys win. Next best guy gets chosen. Another couple guys get picked, and all of a sudden it looks like I'm going to be at home. And we go out the last day. It's me, Jackson Dowell, and Garrett Engel. Well, he was a freshman at our place playing for the last spot, and I end up winning that day barely. And all of a sudden I go to Pebble Beach and play great. And I don't even know what my college career would look like that whole first year, if that turns out differently. I think that type of system, though, that competitiveness brings with it the trust in all the guys that are there, because you know that they've earned it. And I think you saw it later in the year. I ended up having a pretty good year, and that type of system it really makes everybody stronger, even though it feels like some guys are being left out.
Mm-hmm. This past summer, you had kind of a seminal moment, I think, in your golf career, winning the Transmiss, And then you bring that momentum right into the fall. T7, T8, T3 a couple of days ago on a PGA Tour layout. But where have you taken the biggest step, you think, with your game these past 3 or 4 months compared to the last couple of years?
Definitely mentally and in my putting. I don't think it's any secret that the last couple of years, if you've watched me, putting has been a huge hole in my game, and it's bled into other parts of my game where I'm making mental mistakes because I feel like I have to compensate. And I've done a ton of work being able to trust my putter and my mental game and being patient on the golf course, understanding that I don't have to get it all done in the first three holes of a golf tournament, or if I make a mistake, that it's okay, and that I have holes in front of me to go play. And if I just go play those holes better than I just did when I made the mistake, that I'm going to be okay. And we go to PGA Tour golf courses and they're difficult. And I think you can see it out of Colonial. There weren't that many scores under par. Just understanding that, especially as a senior leader, even though people are counting on you, if you make a mistake, you're good enough to recover from that. And I think that's what I've been doing a lot better these last few weeks. I've had the patience. I've trusted what I'm doing with my putting, and it's been a ton better. And it's allowed my game to take a step up.
Walk us through the putter change. Now, you changed your grip. It's been a little bit now, maybe a little over a year, right?
Yeah. So I came into college my fall semester of my freshman year. I looked horrible with the putter in my hands. Made a putter switch over to a true mallet face balance putter. Made a big difference. And then the winter after that, so the winter of my sophomore year, I made the switch to cross-handed. I'd never tried any other grip other than conventional in my life. And it had an immediate impact. And then I would say this previous winter during my junior year, I started working with a mental coach that helped as well. And all these pieces have kind of been building up to a place to where I trust my putter again. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily always come back immediately. I always felt like I was a really good putter in high school, and it was frustrating not to have that. But as these pieces have kind of fallen into place, the confidence has come back. It's like, you know what? I don't need to be afraid over this 4 or 5 footer anymore. I can go do this. I have the tools mentally, physically, you know, in my technique, I'm going to be okay. And I can go do this. And that confidence has really opened some things up for me. All of a sudden, you know, I stand over a 30 footer. It's like, oh, I can make this again, you know, and that's a pretty cool feeling for any guys that have struggled in that, you know what I'm talking about. And just having those tools, I'm excited about where this is headed.
Did you ever flirt with the long putter broomstick?
No, the putter has been a pretty constant one for me. It's helped me. The mallet face balance feel has helped me in a ton of ways, but I never tried anything too out there.
Hibble might not let you on campus with one of those. On the private jet, there's no room.
He's had guys do it. I know Quaid. He's putted with that broomstick type of thing for a while now. He did a pretty good job with it.
Oh, Quaid has the stick now.
I don't know if it's like a broomstick or whatever it is, but it's kind of like the long putter. I don't know if he like arm locks it, but I don't know. Whatever he's doing. I mean, he's on the PGA Tour doing it now, so he's doing okay.
So you have an interesting kind of backstory because you're from Norman originally. You grew up there, I would imagine, a Sooner through and through since birth.
Not since birth. It's really interesting. My dad worked at the University of Arizona, so we lived out there. But my grandparents lived in Stillwater when I was growing up. This is the middle of Ricky Fowler, OSU, Orange Puma gear. If you go look up Drew Goodman, golf, you'll probably find some pictures of me at a drive, chip, and putt in a lot of Orange Puma gear. When it came to recruiting, I actually always thought that I was going to go to Oklahoma State if they offered me. I was a huge Oklahoma State fan, even once we moved to Norman. When I ended up going on visits to both OU and OSU, I just ended up feeling that Oklahoma was the right place for me. Oklahoma State has a lot of good things going for them, but the culture down here in Oklahoma is something special. And that's what drew me to Coach Hibble. I think he's the best college coach out there. I don't think there's a ton of great coaches, but he does an unbelievable job. And he and the program that they built here, the grittiness and the fight, that appealed to me and how I play golf. And I just always knew from once I committed my sophomore year, I knew it was the right place.
Yeah, that kind of leads to my next question. You do hear a lot of people around the game of college golf refer to Coach Hibble as one of the best to ever do it. He's obviously not as old as the Mike Smalls and the Bruce Heplers, but I think when it's all said and done, he'll have a record that matches a lot of those guys. Do you have a good story or a good anecdote that kind of sums up his coaching style? Like maybe a time that he pulled you aside and helped you out with something, or he went the extra mile with something that meant a lot to you. Is there maybe one story that comes to mind that exemplifies, you know, a coach that can be considered the GOAT?
Yeah, I can give you a couple. I think this is a common one for most of our freshmen when they come in. And I think it's funny looking back now as a senior, as I watch these freshmen come in, especially short game wise, Coach is an unbelievable chipper, putter. He does so many things super well. And freshmen coming in, they just don't have all the tools. They don't have the shots that everybody else had. I came in, I watched Logan McAllister and Chris Goddard up hit these shots. I was like, I am never going to be able to do this. I don't know how they do this. And he takes the time, if you go ask him to go teach you some of these shots, it's like, how can I get better? How can I get this ball up in the air? How can I get spin on it? He's going to teach you something new. And then all of a sudden it opens up your game to something that you didn't think you could have before. And now I get the pleasure of seeing these freshmen come onto campus, and I can teach them in the same way that Coach taught me. Well, he's working with them too. It's like, I can see where you guys were. It was me like 3 years ago. And I can't even imagine how much better you're going to get, you know, just being around and having Coach around you every day. And then I got a pretty quick, cool one from last week. I mean, obviously I played well this last week at Colonial, but the 2 years, my freshman and sophomore year that we played at Colonial, I got my face kicked in. I mean, I played horrible. I don't even know what I finished, but it was not good. And Coach kind of pulled me aside before we went down there. And he's like, you have the tools, you're ready to go. Like, there's nothing for you to go be afraid of. Like, go take on this place, go get some revenge. And something like that, where it's something little, like he just took me aside for 5 minutes and talked about it. And it shows you he cares, and he's building up that confidence in you. It's like, you're going to a place that you've had some bad things happen, but like, you can go do it. He prepares us as good as I think anybody ever could.
Mm-hmm. You're up to 14th in the PGA Tour U rankings, which one of my favorite numbers, of course, number 14. But has playing on the PGA Tour, has that always been a goal for you, like when you first started playing?
Yeah, for sure. I grew up wanting to go play the PGA Tour, wanting to go win PGA Tour events, wanting to go win majors. That's still one of my big goals. And PGA Tour U is obviously an awesome opportunity for us. I'm super thankful to see how it's grown, and it keeps on getting better for us. I honestly hadn't looked at it much. I could not have told you where I was until you just told me. I think that's another way that Coach prepares us. He always tells us, you know, if you play good golf, you're going to end up where you need to end up. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited as I kind of look forward. I don't want to gloss over this last year with my guys, because it's going to be awesome. But I am excited for when that moment comes at the end of the year, and I'm ready to step into pro golf.
As a quick aside, you could probably, I mean, maybe the statute of limitations is up on this, but who started the hashtag 14? Who is the most bent out of shape, you think, about it?
I think it's got to be Chris. I wanted to thank you at some point for your preseason ranking, and I did see your article after Inverness where you locked in your pick for the national championship. You know, maybe I'll let people go find that for themselves. But if I remember right, Chris was not super happy my freshman year about a certain team being picked 14th, and then yeah, you know, we had a great year. We didn't end up getting it done. So, you know, maybe it didn't end up mattering. But yeah, it's always fun seeing those preseason rankings come out.
Yeah, you guys were number one for most of the year and yeah, won a lot of tournaments and were very relentless and reminding me how stupid I can be sometimes. But I did text Chris before this podcast and asked him if he had any, you know, questions to ask. And he said to stop hitting so many balls. Is that an issue for you? You're getting, you know, beating too many balls out there sometimes, or
it can be. I can get super technical, super analytical. I've had Chris tell me that before. He's like, dude, just like go do something different. And that's probably really good advice. I've even had, you know, some wrist problems just because, you know, I'll go into our trainer. He's like, what are you doing? You're just overworking yourself. Your wrist is hurting because of that. And it can hurt me mentally too, because I'll get super technical and analytical and all of a sudden I'm playing golf swing and not golf. So yeah, that's probably really good advice from Chris. He knows what he's won on the PGA Tour. He knows what he's doing. So
yeah, whatever you're doing right now, I wouldn't change one thing because it's working. Any other interests or expected careers growing up? Like if golf didn't work out, did you have a plan B?
Honestly, no. I've wanted this for, I mean, as long as I can remember. When I was 12, I quit baseball and basketball, even though I was probably a lot better at baseball at that point than I was at golf.
Pitcher, shortstop,
first base. I was okay. A big kid. I grew super early. I hit it way further than everybody else. I think everybody kind of expected for me to just kind of keep playing every sport. And I remember the night I went in and told my dad, it's like, I want to go play golf. And like, I think I can be really, really good. And I honestly wasn't really good at 12. I was okay, but not like this kid is going to be D1 for sure. And I think he was really surprised, but ever since then I've known that this is what I'm going to do. I haven't really thought about anything else.
So at the time you were a legit baseball player. Like if you kept going, you could have.
I don't know about legit, but I definitely think if you looked at me playing baseball and me playing golf, it's like, well, he's probably like better at baseball. Like if you were going to pick one of the two, you know, to maybe keep playing, it'd probably be baseball. But I'd love golf so much. It's the best. I can't imagine doing anything different.
Were you a first baseman like a Bryce Harper who hit dingers, or were you more like a Casey Kochman, like, you know, slap it around, hit for average?
Probably kind of in the middle. A lot, you know, 12U baseball, you're not necessarily sending many over the fence, but I hit a lot of doubles in the gap. That time I actually just hopped off watching the Royals game, diehard Royals fan. So I'm still okay into baseball a little bit, but yeah, every once in a while, I still miss it, but you know, golf's been my thing for a while. I don't think that's going to change.
Golf number one, weightlifting number two, maybe.
Yeah, I remember the tweet that you put out from Frederica my sophomore year. I don't know if I ever ended up telling you the story about that, but yeah, I went to.
Oh, please tell it.
We had two different styles of Nike shorts that year. Of course, I tried on one of them before going to get them hemmed up, and did not try on the others, just assumed that I was, you know, going to need to hem them up the same length. Get down to Frederica, still haven't tried on this other style. It's our white colored shorts that we're wearing the last day. And I put them on in the hotel room that morning, and they're about 3 inches too short.
they're the classic 2-inch inseams.
They were obscenely short and very embarrassing, because I think I was also playing in the final group that day. Like I also played
that was
well.
The first tournament I brought my daughter out to. She was like 3 months old. Yeah, I remember that. Man. And it rained too. So the white shorts with the rain. What was his reaction initially?
I think he just kind of looked at me like I was an idiot and just kind of like walked on. He's like, man, what are you doing? You know, you're so dumb. But yeah, that was, I don't think, a day I'm going to forget for a while. I needed new shorts after that.
Did it hinder your golf swing at all, or no?
I don't think so. I think it may have helped. I think I played good that day, if I remember right. So maybe I should have kept them.
Yeah, I think you finished second to William Mall.
That sounds about right. Yep.
Yeah. What's your personal best squat?
Honestly, I'm kind of scared I'm going to hurt myself. It's not as much as you think. 275 is probably it. I'm kind of scared to go past that, which is, you know, kind of disappointing to anybody listening probably who thinks it's going to be like 450 or something. But
I mean, if you could do unlimited reps at 275,
More of like a rear elevated split squat guy or a reverse, like pick up some 100-pound dumbbells and do some stuff with that rather than put something on my back and, you know, probably hurt myself somehow.
Now there's another good story from, I'm not sure, it wasn't the Frederica Cup, it might have been the Jones Cup. I'm leaving the course one day and I see you like running and like a long distance. Is that normal for you, or are you a big runner?
Oh, I think that was down at Jones Cup. So this was the start of an interesting journey that I went on with a buddy of mine. It was right after New Year's, and we were hanging out. And for some reason, he had done a ton of running. His name's Nolan. Nolan had lost a bunch of weight just doing about, he loved running, and we were talking about it, and he's like, I'm going to run a half marathon this year. I was like, dude, that's awesome. Like, I'll do it with you. I have no idea why I told him that, but I was like, sure, why not? I'll do it. So yeah, you saw me down at Jones Cup beginning my training plan to run a half marathon in the middle of the golf season. Ended up being a really dumb idea because I ended up completing it, the half marathon. It was a week before regionals, and my IT bands were so tight for the next 3 weeks. I was getting worked on by our trainer for an hour and a half before each round just to like be able to walk. So cool experience, probably a overall pretty bad idea. But yeah, I was starting my training plan down at Jones Cup running 3 miles because I'd never really run any distance before.
So probably one and done marathon runner.
Yeah, I think I'll slap that like 13.1 sticker on the back of my car and call it good.
Now, speaking of regionals postseason, it was kind of been a tale of two postseasons for you guys this past season. Some really great rounds, like prolific rounds, and then some rounds that were nearly a complete 180. Now, I talked to Hibble coming into this season, and he actually said he left La Costa feeling pretty positive because you guys did show that you can be the best team in the country. You just needed to put it together. Did you look at those, you know, handful of days, those 4 days at La Costa, that postseason last year? Did you come away from that feeling similar to Hibble?
For sure. I mean, I think I remember we were making the turn in the morning of the second round and we were in second to last place. And like, I was shocked. I was playing horrible. Everybody was playing horrible. And you look up the last day and we missed it by one and arguably should have made match play. We did an unbelievable job playing in the afternoon, the third day, just making the cut and then getting off to a great start the last day to have a chance to make match play. I think that shows kind of the potential that I talked about that this team can have. Most of those guys from that team are back. You know, I'm still here. Summy, Ryder Cowan and PJ Maybank, who was our sub that week and got a little taste of NCAA tournament action. There's a ton of potential there. And I think the growth of those guys over the summer, all of a sudden you turn around and we're a golf team that can win really, really good tournaments in the fall and are looking at making a great run in the spring. I didn't think there was any reason to be super negative. Obviously it's super disappointing because you want to win a national championship and it's tough to lose an opportunity when you only have four, but looking toward a senior season, I was like, this can be a really, really good team. I'm excited about where we're going to be.
Mm-hmm. How long did you kind of play that last putt on 18 through your head after that?
A long time. It was even more disappointing because I felt like I hit a pretty decent putt.
It horseshoed, didn't it?
it caught a lot of the hole. It felt like it was going to be a right edge putt and that it had to break. And, you know, maybe I hit it a little too hard. Maybe I misread it, whatever it was. Maybe I pushed it a little bit, but you know, I think as you look toward a new year, you know, you look at our golf team and that's motivation for a new year. You talk to guys, it's like, are you doing everything that you can to be your best? Like, we missed having a chance to win a national championship and every single lower seed the next day in the quarterfinals won. Mm-hmm. We missed that chance by one shot. How can we make sure to get that one shot next year? How can we make sure to be 30 shots ahead of where that cut is next year? And it hurt for a long time because I knew that was a great chance for our team and I didn't come through, but that's also a learning opportunity. And coach stressed that with us that we were going to grow from that. And I think you've seen at the beginning of this year that we're a different squad.
Yeah, there's always a mindset that some people look at stuff like that. And if you made every putt that you hit and it made every putt that you looked at, when you made big putts, you wouldn't have the feeling of accomplishment. Like, it would just be, you know, that's what always happens. So, so some big news today, 2 more years of LaCosta in addition to the 2. So I guess that's through 2028. You'll be in the final group of the Masters by then, we would expect. But what have been your initial thoughts on that golf course and how it played? I know it was a very new golf course, probably a little firm. But layout wise, how did you feel like it played for a national championship?
I really, really liked it. And to be honest, I think looking back to Greyhawk, this might be an unpopular opinion. I actually somewhat liked how Greyhawk played too. In my mind, and LaCosta did a really good job of this, you want the best 8 teams that week to be the 8 teams in match play. And you want to have the best teams come out on top. And I think LaCosta did a great job of that. The firmness, I think maybe 8 and 16, the 2 par 3s, I would hope they soften them up just a little bit. 16 especially. But other than that, I thought the golf course played awesome. You know, I would way rather see a difficult golf course that rewards the best teams, the most prepared teams. And I think it did that. So I'm excited to see how it is this next year. I hope it's similar besides 1 or 2 spots.
As someone who's played regionals at home, and I think they also announced maybe 2027 or 2028 regional headed back to Jimmy. But as someone who's played postseason events at home and also a baseball guy, which side do you favor? Do you favor maybe a permanent site like an Omaha for college golf at LaCosta, or are you still in the camp, as much as you like the golf course, are you still in the camp that would like to see it bounce around and we can get some moments like we got in Eugene in 2016, Carson Creek in 2018?
It's super interesting. I think, you know, there's definitely pros and cons to both, but I think it'd be really, really cool if they could end up having it in one spot. I think the vision is kind of there. I think the layout of the golf course too, you can do some really cool things around that finishing stretch around kind of 1, 16, 17, 18. I would think it'd be really cool if I'm looking back in 20 years, it's like, hey, I played in the first one at LaCosta, you know, it's been there for 20 years now. We've got that history, you know, hopefully we look back, it's 2025. I won a national championship there and our boys are going in 2045 and they're trying to do it again. I honestly think it'd be really cool if they do it the right way. Obviously it's cool to go around to different parts of the country and different schools, but man, you look at something like Omaha for baseball and that's what everybody thinks of when they think of College World Series or even softball for us. I mean, in Oklahoma City, mm-hmm. everybody knows where it's at. Everybody's excited for it and you can build around that.
And with golf, especially, you mentioned the history, the fact that you could have a record book to where 2040, 2045, you have iconic shots like the Masters, you have records, you know, tournament records, team scoring records, things like that. I think that could be a really valuable thing for the sport. And I guess for the sake of the Sooners in my predictions, hopefully that record book will include a 2025 Oklahoma team title at La Costa.
Yeah, I think we're building the right way. I would love to go out that way. We're gonna put everything we have into getting there, and I'm really proud of our guys. They've come a long way. I'm the only guy left from my recruiting class. So, you know, at some times it can feel like I'm on an island with some younger guys, but man, they've done an amazing job. Jace and Troutman and Ryder and PJ this last week. You can see where they've grown. They've come such a long ways, and I'm super excited to go on this run with them and all the guys that we have.
Well, Drew, appreciate the time, and no more marathons or half marathons for the next few months. I'm sure we don't have to remind you.
No, absolutely not. Thank you, Brentley. Appreciate you.
Yep.
Well, what a enjoyable conversation with Drew there, Burko. I want to ask you one thing. And when Drew was talking about how he decided on a whim to do a marathon, you're a runner. I know your wife's a big runner as well. Have you ever run a marathon, first of all? And can you sympathize with the fact that he was having some severe issues with his IT bands for the next few months after that?
I've not run a marathon. I have no intention of running a marathon. I believe I could run a half marathon because of what I do on a daily basis. God bless Drew. You do not run a marathon on a whim. And I can relate to IT band. And
he did issues. Train. He did train a little bit, but yeah.
No, you don't. I've watched my wife train for marathons, and she didn't train just a little bit. I've also watched her run 1:24 half marathons. So she's a different type of runner. If you're going to commit to that, you better commit. And get those foam rollers, get those cupping devices, stretch, and those IT bands will still bother you.
Yeah, I will not be running a half marathon. 5K is probably my limit. I actually did triathlons back around college. I did a couple sprint triathlons, and the running was always, to me, I would rank them as the swimming was the easiest for me. Because it's just out and back. Once you get past all the, you know, the crowds and the bunched up racers right off the bat, it gets easy. Running was the second easiest, and the biking was always the hardest. Maybe not physically, but just in terms of how I compared to everyone else, I felt like I would lose so much ground in the bike, and I stopped doing it because that's where I was giving away all the time. And you would think that would be the easiest.
I leave that to my wife and her family, being the world-class distance runner she was in her heyday, and my brother-in-law, the first ever Olympic U.S. triathlete in Sydney in 2000.
Really?
Really. That was the first time they had it. He kicked off the Olympics in Sydney, jumping into the harbor, first event in 2000. Well,
thankfully, he didn't have to jump into the scene this year. But did he didn't medal, though, did he?
No. And he knew it. She said he peaked like 3 months early. He knew going. All those are at such a level. Mm-hmm. And he knew going in. And,
yeah,
I'd maybe finish 26th or something. So when it comes to that, I'm going to leave it to brother-in-law and wife to go set all the records. I'll be happy with my 8-minute mile pace and tight IT bands along the way. Goodman, part of the Oklahoma team, we promised you results. They won by 4 over Texas. Is Oklahoma the team to beat right now? I'm not going to say they're the team to beat right now. Are they the best team in early October? Yes. Plain and simple. They've showed up in 2 big events, got the job done. David Ford from North Carolina wins individually. The Tar Heels finish 4th. Vanderbilt 6th. Gordon Sargent struggles again. So a lot to take from those events. Ryan Hibbles, really good, plain and simple. And you know he wasn't satisfied with less than stellar performances a year ago by his team.
Well, I'm just glad that I got ahead of this and before their two wins, or actually after the first win, picked Oklahoma to win it all. They're my pick. I'm going to ask you for your pick because I think it's about time that you go on the record, but we'll do that after this thought. Really happy for David Ford. There was a question, I think, late in the summer with his hip, if he was going to even be able to play at all this season. He's clearly avoided disaster, has figured something out, and is starting to play some great golf, and they're going to need him to continue to do so. I don't want to discredit Arizona State because they finished fifth, 21 shots back, but did not have Jose Le Ballester, who was playing over in Spain on the DP World Tour. So I think they get him back. You get Preston Summerhays kind of going a little bit. He was a little better T25. Arizona State probably has a case right along with Oklahoma. A couple more quick ones. Daniel Bennett makes his debut for Texas. The freshman didn't qualify for the first two events. Birdies his first three holes on a PGA Tour layout, and he finishes T3. So you add a solid three or four guy now and Daniel Bennett to the Longhorns lineup. They're going to have a say in things as we get into the thicker part of this schedule. And want to close with Sargent again. We thought we were seeing some improvement, but you make 13 birdies and you still shoot 8 over par. There's clearly something amiss. And, I think Vandy's in trouble. If this continues, I don't know if JVP is enough to be able to lead this team into match play, let alone even the NCAA championship.
You're putting me on the spot looking for rankings, and now you've like got me fired up.
I feel like you have to get a little sexier this year, because the last couple years, both you and I, to be fair, we've gone very much chalk. I think we were both on Vanderbilt last year. The year before that, I think you were on Vanderbilt and I was on, I think we might have been both on either Vandy or UNC each of the last 2 years.
How come I can't just go to a website and get a rank?
Because the rankings aren't out yet, right? They're not out yet. The professor. Real quick though, while you keep the search going, I do want to shout out, because I feel like I've been overly critical of the job that our Clip Boys have been doing over on scoreboard.com, but they did roll out some updates today. They are working on things. You now have hole by hole scores on the drop down on the team leaderboards. That's a plus. We have more stats, scoring averages, par three, par four, par five leaders, all of this stuff. It all looks really good. A couple more tweaks, though. I think that you need to have it when you click on a tournament. It needs to automatically go to the final round or the most recent round with scores. It's still kind of reverting to the first round, but that's all kind of minor. So I think credit is deserved where credit is due. And, shout out to the guys at Clip for listening and making a few changes. But have you found a ranking yet?
Yes, it's on.
You could just look at the Hogan Collegiate leaderboard, to be honest. Those are all your.
And I'm not locked in. I'm going to say Virginia. And you've been bullish on that team a little bit. Our standard fare of Vandy in North Carolina. They're on the other side of things. Doesn't mean they can't get back there. Their window has closed, in my estimation, of what they had and what they possibly could do. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen in the spring or great recruits come in. Obviously, Oklahoma playing better than anyone else right now. But just to go off the beaten path, and not really, because they're a top 10 team, I actually told somebody the other day, and Ben Jay, who is a Virginia Cavalier and in the industry, I said, you've got a kid in Charlottesville that in 3 years likely will be a fixture on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, if not a Ryder Cup or multiple winner, major regular. Yeah, I agree with you. And I kind of clipped you on Oklahoma because that might have been the pick as well, but I got
that's
in there
right.
First. I hit the Family Feud buzzer first and was able to get in on the Oklahoma bandwagon, which to be fair, I have not been on the Oklahoma bandwagon in the past. Hopefully they'll treat me well as they welcome me on.
You're just getting out ahead of things. That is a smart veteran move. We appreciate Drew Goodman for joining us earlier in the show. And as always, we thank you for tuning in to College Golf Talk. We will do it again next week, as we always do each and every week, as the fall season kind of halfway done. It doesn't take long to get on the back end of things. So we'll sort of set up the trip to St. Andrews coming up late next week into the early part of the following week, and continue our love of college golf. For Brentley, I'm Burka. We'll see you again next week.